We always certainly enjoy coming over to St. Petersburg and seeing all of our long-term friends here. The thought for this message started back in the Feast of Tabernacles this year, and I happened to be talking to a long-term friend of mine I hadn't seen in many years, and we were discussing different people that we had known over the years, and he mentioned one particular individual, and he said, "Did you know that he had passed away a couple of weeks ago?" And I said, "No, I didn't know." But we had both known this particular individual from a different congregation, and he started talking about him. And this particular individual, as we knew, was a very much a pillar in the church. If there was an activity, he was right in the middle of it, probably planning it. He was very active in everything that the church did. And as my friend and I were talking at the feast, he started to mention, well, he hasn't really come to church in a couple of years, and it just seemed like he slowed down coming to church and just quietly faded away and didn't come anymore. Now, I'm not judging that particular situation, but that sparked a thought in my mind. And by contrast, in visiting another church area, I happened to come across someone I had known, a long-term member from the 1970s, and we had been friends. He came to our wedding, and we were talking, and he is a long-time member and still a pillar in the church, even still in his 90s, still very involved in everything, still there pretty much every week. And I was just in my mind contrasting the two, and I had the thought, do we ever grow weary in doing good? Here was the one gentleman. He was still in his 90s, very active. The other fellow had mentioned, and I'm not judging that situation, but he quietly faded away even though he was active one time. Well, so many times we can kind of find ourselves growing weary. Here we are. So maybe you've been attending for 10 years, and maybe you've heard 10 years of sermons, and sometimes the same sermon, and sometimes we turn to the same scriptures. If you've been attending for 10 years, and I did some calculation, you would have heard approximately 650 sermons. Now, maybe you've been attending 30 or 40 years, and if you were attending 40 years in my calculations, on average, maybe you've heard 2,600 sermons, or even 50 years, 3,250 sermons, some of the same scriptures, the same verses. Maybe you've attended 40 or 50 Feast of Tabernacles. Maybe you've attended 40 or 50 Passovers and washed feet and partook of the bread and the wine. Maybe you've seen friends healed. Maybe you've seen friends died and still waiting their healing. Maybe you've seen the church split, and maybe more than once. You've endured the humanity of other people. You've seen the humanity come out in other people, and even seen the humanity of the ministers and other human beings. You've held fast even at the falling away of maybe some of your friends, and maybe family members, and maybe even leaders of the church. Maybe you've been handing out songbooks year after year. Maybe you've been setting up chairs. Maybe you've been running the sound system or cleaning up the hall. Maybe you've been taking care of someone in need, giving someone a ride to church or helping serve them in some way year after year. Do we ever find ourselves getting in a rut in serving? Do we ever feel burned out? The meaning of burned out, Merriam-Webster's dictionary states, exhaustion of physical or emotional strength or motivation, usually as a result of prolonged stress or frustration. The Internet Free Dictionary states in reference to burned out, fatigue, frustration, or apathy resulting from prolonged stress, overwork, or intense activity. So have we ever felt burned out? Does the day-to-day stress of life wear us down? And certainly anything, even the small things, can wear us down. Driving in traffic, going to the grocery store, and all these things can build up to wear us out. Maybe we clean the chairs. Maybe we clean the bathrooms. Maybe we make the coffee every week. Maybe we clean the hall. And maybe we even do things that nobody ever even sees. Do we ever get to that point where we just don't care anymore? And then we start missing activities, and then we start missing church services, and as we've seen with different people, we just fade away. Christians can get tired of doing good. And that first excitement of doing whatever we might be doing, being involved in Spokesman's Club, doing the cards, serving in potlucks, maybe that first excitement has waned after many years, and we've grown weary in doing good. The thrill is gone. And we see the unhappiness and the detachment of that burned out feeling can threaten our relationships. It can even threaten our health. It can even threaten our salvation. And by recognizing this and the signs, we can take steps to prevent burnout. What does the Bible say about burnout? Well, today we're going to look at what causes burnout and what we can do to combat growing weary in serving. If you want a title, it's simply that, Growing Weary in Well-Doing. Are you burned out? Do you feel burned out or worn out? And we can all feel tired or worn out from doing good. Parents of all ages can get tired. They can become weary. Grandparents, children can become weary. I know when we have our grandchildren over, it's a lot of fun, but in a short period of time, they can wear you out. Grandparents, employees, employers, church members, we can all become tired and worn out. We can all become burned out if we're not careful. I was driving down the road and listening to the radio, and I heard this, and this maybe you've heard it before, but it seems to apply to what we're talking about today. So I jotted it down and thought I would share it with you. And it's about a lady who telephoned her friend and asked how she was feeling. Terrible, she said, came the reply. Everything's going wrong. My head hurts. My head's splitting. My back hurts. My legs are killing me. The house is a mess. Have we ever felt that way? The kids are driving me crazy, she said. And very systematically, the caller said, well, listen, it's okay. Go lie down. Get some rest. I'll come over. I'll cook lunch for you. I'll clean the house for you. I'll take care of the kids. And while you get some rest and relax. And, oh, by the way, how's your husband, Sam? Sam, the person on the other side, said, gasp, I have no husband named Sam. The lady said, oh, I'm so sorry. I must have dialed the wrong number. And after a long pause, the lady said, well, are you still coming over? Well, Paul warns us in the book of Galatians, if you would turn over to Galatians chapter 6, a warning from Paul about this subject. Galatians chapter 6 and verse 9. And this will be our key verse today. We're going to come back to it, so if you want to keep a marker here. Galatians chapter 6 and verse 9. Let us not grow weary while doing good, for in due season we shall reap if we do not lose heart. Now I went back and I researched some different translations of this verse, and I thought it was interesting, so I thought I would share just a few of those as we kind of a little better understand the verse. The New International Version states, let us not become weary in doing good, for at the proper time we will reap a harvest if we do not give up. The New Living Translation states, so let us not get tired of doing what is good. At just the right time, we will reap a harvest of blessing if we do not give up. The English Standard Version states, let us not grow weary in doing good, for in due season we will reap if we do not give up. And it seems like a common thread in these translations, those words, if we do not give up. New American Standard Bible states, let us not lose heart in doing good, for in due time we will reap if we do not grow weary. God's Word translation states, we cannot allow ourselves to get tired of living the right way. Certainly each of us will receive everlasting life at the proper time, it states, if we do not give up. Just one more. States, let us not be weary in well-doing, for in due season we will reap if we faint not. So the meaning of the word weary comes from a Greek word, and it states utterly, or it's defined utterly spiritless, exhausted, burned out. And have we ever felt that way? Probably all of us have at times. The meaning of well-doing is to live virtuously, fair, honest, worthy, and good. And there are many Bible examples of people that have become weary. Let's just take a look at a couple of examples. Let's take a look at the example of Moses in the book of Exodus. Exodus chapter 18. There are many. We're just going to briefly touch on a couple of them. Examples of people that have grown weary. Moses, Exodus chapter 18. We'll start reading in verse 13. And it was on the next day that Moses sat to judge the people, Exodus 18:13. And the people stood before Moses from morning until evening. Now you can imagine the scene. Here's Moses sitting in a chair there, and just lines of people coming to him, trying to solve all of their problems. Verse 14. So when Moses' father-in-law saw all that he did for the people, he said, "What is this thing that you're doing for the people?" Seemed like it was a good thing. "Why do you alone sit and all the people stand before you from morning until evening?" All day long, Moses served the people. Verse 15, and Moses said to his father-in-law, "Because the people come to me to inquire of God. And when they have a difficulty, they come to me and I judge between one and another. And I make known the statutes of God and his laws." So Moses' father-in-law said to him, "This thing that you do is not good. Both you and these people who are with you will surely wear yourselves out. For this thing is too much for you. You're not able to perform it by yourself." And then he goes on to give him some instructions. "Listen to my voice, and I will give you counsel, and God will be with you. Stand before God for the people so that you may bring the difficulties to God." And he went on to instruct him. Verse 20, "And you shall teach them the statutes and the laws. And verse 21, "Moreover, you shall select from all the people able men." And verse 22, "And let them judge the people at all times. Then it will be that every great matter they shall bring to you, but every small matter they themselves shall judge. So it will be easier for you, and they will bear the burden with you." So we see that Moses could get worn out also. He could grow weary in doing good. Let's turn to 1 Kings, the example of Elijah. And we're all familiar, 1 Kings chapter 19, with all the miracles that Elijah was involved with, how he destroyed the prophets of Baal, how he made fun of the prophets of Baal, all of the miracles that he was involved with, how much faith he had. 1 Kings in chapter 19, starting in verse 1. But even after all of that, after all that he was involved with, he still became weary and fearful. Verse 1 of chapter 19 of 1 Kings. "And Ahab told Jezebel all that Elijah had done, also how he had executed all the prophets with the sword," and that would be all the prophets of Baal. Verse 2, "And Jezebel sent a messenger to Elijah, saying, 'So let the gods do to me, and more also, if I do not make your life as the life of one of them by tomorrow about this time.'" So she was going to have him killed. That's what she was saying. "And when he saw that, he arose and ran for his life and went to Beersheba, which belongs to Judah, and left his servant there. But he himself went a day's journey into the wilderness, and he came and sat down under a broom tree, and he prayed that he might die and said, 'It's enough. It's enough, God, it's enough. Now, Lord, take my life, for I'm no better than my father's.'" He was worn out. Do we ever say or think it's enough? We might think of the example in Isaiah, when after everything that he was involved with, Isaiah 6:5, we don't need to turn there, but his quote, and I quote, was, "Woe is me, for I am undone." Do we ever feel undone? Well, let's take a few moments to look at some of the ways that we can grow weary, or some of the causes that we can grow weary in well-doing. And probably one of the worst enemies of enthusiasm is time. And human beings, we as human beings are remarkable because we can get tired of wonderful things, even things we enjoy doing. Almost everything that we can think of, something that we're enthusiastic about, over time we can become weary and that joy is faded. We might think of a first day of vacation and how wonderful that is. But if that's all we ever did, vacation, then we can become weary of our vacation. We might think of the best and prettiest sunset we've ever seen. But if that's all we ever do is every day, watch that sunset, it can get tired of it. Even millionaires get tired of money. Kids get tired of toys. And it's a phenomenon. It seems as though when you have children or grandchildren, you can take toys and it's not long and they're tired of them. And so people have thought, well, we need to do just a monthly toy exchange around. So every month they get all brand new toys. And sooner or later their toys come back again and then they're new. Even eating dessert, if you ate the same and dessert every day and nothing but dessert, even good, fun things, we can become tired of them. If you like fishing and that's all you did, we can become weary of fishing. If you've served 10, 30, 50 years, we can grow weary. So we might ask ourselves, why do we grow weary? One reason is sometimes we don't see results in what we're doing or what we are accomplishing. And we as human beings, we need results. We live in a results-oriented society. Everything we do is measured, and there are results. Teachers give tests out. We have to perform at a certain level. Employers, employees, they have to match a certain level. They have to produce certain results. My cousin was telling me he worked for a large shipping company, and it was day after day. They measured his results of how he moved certain number of boxes, how he did this, how he performed that. And it was interesting. He told me he figured on a daily basis he probably walked 20 miles inside of that particular building every day. Everything is measured. Sometimes we can't see the results of our actions. Sometimes our actions, the results are long-term. And sometimes we don't see them even though that they're there, and that can be discouraging. And sometimes we grade ourselves by comparing ourselves to others, and that's not good. Sometimes we need to remember that the result is that God is in the process of changing our lives, and he's in the process of establishing his kingdom. And that is the results as we look ahead to his kingdom. God's word gives us and he teaches us these results, and we are to look forward to them. Another way that we can grow weary in well-doing is a lack of appreciation. We do all of these things and it doesn't seem like anybody notices or no one even thinks about it, and sometimes we can feel like we're being taken for granted. Let's turn to 2 Timothy chapter 3. The society we live in, this has become the norm. People are unthankful. So what can we do? We can be thankful. We can have a thankful attitude to others. 2 Timothy chapter 3. We're going to start in verse 1. Talking about the last days, what it's going to be like. Certainly, we see it in society around us. 2 Timothy 3, verse 1, but know this, that in the last days, perilous times will come. For men will be lovers of themselves, lovers of money, boasters, proud, blasphemers, disobedient to parents. There it is, unthankful, unholy, unloving, unforgiving, slanderers, without self-control, brutal despisers of good, traitors, headstrong, haughty, lovers of pleasures rather than lovers of God, having a form of godliness but denying its power. And from such people turn away. And so right here in the middle of these terrible things, we see unthankful. And unthankful is terrible in itself. Do we make sure and make it a point to show appreciation to other people? Do we look for ways to show appreciation and show our thanks to other people for what they do? Let's turn over to Luke 17 as we look at an example, a very familiar example to all of us, but a good reminder. Are we always ready to give thanks? Luke chapter 17, starting in verse 11. Luke 17, starting in verse 11. Now it happened as he went to Jerusalem that he passed through the midst of Samaria and Galilee. Then as he entered a certain village, there met him 10 men who were lepers, who stood afar off. And leprosy was a terrible disease, more common back then, but a terrible disfiguring disease. And they lifted up their voices and said, "Jesus, Master, have mercy on us." So when he saw them, he said to them, "Go show yourselves to the priest." And so it was as they went, they were cleansed. Now one of them, when he saw that he was healed, returned with a loud voice, glorified God, and fell down on his face at his feet, giving him thanks. And he was a Samaritan. So Jesus answered and said, "Were there not 10 cleansed, but where are the other 9? Were there not any found who returned to give glory or thanks to God except this foreigner?" And he said to him, "Arise, go your way. Your faith has made you well." We should always be looking for ways to show appreciation to others. Another way that we can grow weary is we see a lack of doing in others. It seems sometimes we feel like we're the only ones carrying the load. And we've often heard, and we can sometimes get discouraged, that 90% of the work is done by 10% of the people. And so many times we can see that. Another way is that we see Satan's influence around us, and Satan influences us in many ways that can cause us to become weary. We see worldly pressures, and it's different now than it was 10 years ago, or even 20 years ago, or 50 years ago. We never heard of Facebook, or we never heard of the internet 30 years ago, but just looking on Facebook this week, here were different things that would pop up. Evil verses from the Bible, it said. This was some things that I saw on my Facebook account. Nonsense from the Bible. Fantasies from the Bible. These are Facebook posts that pop up from time to time. And when you see that every day, Satan is influencing us right there in our home. We see the world around us screaming that there is no God, Satan's influence. And we know that if a lie is told enough, if it's told loud enough, in an angry way, fast enough, spoken quickly enough, repeated enough, we might have a tendency to start believing it. People will believe it. We see the love of the world around us. We see society loving the world, turning its back on God, and certainly Satan broadcasting at every angle that there is no God. We see that love of the world. We see the lie that things make us happy, and things don't make us happy. Let's turn over to an example in Matthew 13. Once again, a very familiar example. When we think of Satan's influence, we think of the love of the world. We see a warning in Matthew chapter 13. We'll start reading in verse 3. Matthew 13, verse 3. And he spoke many things to them in parables, saying, "Behold, a sower went out to sow. And as he sowed, some seed fell by the wayside, and the birds came and devoured them. Some fell on stony places where they did not have much earth, and they immediately sprang up because they had no depth of earth. But when the sun was up, they were scorched because they had no root and withered away. And some fell among thorns, and the thorns sprang up and choked them. Verse 8, but others fell on good ground and yielded a crop, some 100-fold, some 60, and some 30. Verse 9, he who has ears to hear, let him hear. And as we go down, drop down to verse 18, and explains this parable. Therefore, hear the parable of the sower, verse 19. When anyone hears the word of the kingdom and does not understand it, then the wicked one, Satan's influence, comes and snatches away what was sown in his heart. This is the one who received seed by the wayside. But he who received the seed on stony places, this is he who hears the word, immediately receives it with joy, yet he has no root in himself, but endures only for a little while. For when tribulation or persecution arises because of the word, immediately he stumbles. And we've all seen people that have stumbled and fallen away. Verse 22. Now he who receives seed among the thorns is he who hears the word, and the cares of this world, the deceitfulness of riches, choke the word, and he becomes unfruitful. Satan broadcasts that lie over and over again, that things make us happy. Verse 23, but he who receives seed on the good ground is he who hears the word and understands it, who indeed bears fruit and produces some 100-fold, some 60, and some 30. So what do we need to do? We need to focus on God's plan. We need to focus on God's kingdom. We need to focus on God's positive way of life. When we think of growing weary, there are many things that can cause us to grow weary. We all experience trials, and sometimes very difficult trials, and certainly we can feel burned out or weary going through very difficult trials. Personal conflicts, health trials, family conflicts, employer, supervisor conflicts, conflicts at work, conflicts with our children. We all can experience those difficulties which cause us to grow weary. Well, let's look at some strategies that can help us combat this weariness and bring back that joy of doing good. What can we do? What are some ways that we can deal with it? And one of the easiest ways is just simply make a change in whatever we might be doing. Do something different. Get out of the rut. Serve in a different way. Do something different in our daily routine. Another thing that we can do is to have and make sure that we have and work on having perseverance. We'll spend a little bit of time here on this point. Perseverance, having that diligence, having that determination, and that's a godly principle. Webster's defines determination as the act of deciding definitely and firmly, firm or fixed intention to achieve a desired end. When we think of determination, it's an important characteristic of life. It's what keeps us going when we'd rather give up. Determination keeps us from quitting a demanding job or giving up on a fragile relationship. Determination helps us endure life storms, battle enticing temptation, persevere through difficult and terrible trials. As a matter of fact, none of us can get through life without having determination. It's something that we all have and need. Living our life properly requires determination. I am reminded of a boxing match years ago, and I looked this up on the internet and got to refresh the details, but the boxing match occurred November 25th, 1980. Probably many of you remember it also. When we think of determination, perseverance, this came to mind. This was the second of three boxing matches between Sugar Ray Leonard and Roberto Duran. This particular one took place in the Louisiana Superdome, and I've been there in that building back in the late 1970s. It was the largest indoor building arena at the time in the world. It might still be, I don't know. But this is where the second match took place. In their first fight, just 5 months earlier in Montreal, Roberto Duran won a unanimous decision. And this was their second fight. So this was a rematch. This was their rematch of their boxing fight. And so it was highly publicized. It was highly anticipated. But as they boxed through round after round, it was pretty well even. The scores were pretty well even until they got to the eighth round. Then midway through the eighth round, Roberto Duran just held up his boxing gloves and said, "No mas, no mas," which means no more, no more. He decided just simply right there to quit and give up. And the boxing world was amazed. He just simply gave up in the eighth round. And if you go and look that up, and I did this morning, and you search in Google or whatever, and you just say the no must fight, and this comes up. He simply gave up. But what's amazing is many people in God's church have just quit serving God. They've thrown in the towel. They're no longer in the race. They've turned on their backs, and effectively they've said, no mas, no more. People, no matter how long they've been disciples or whatever their background is, they've thrown in the towel. I'm reminded of seeing a pillar in God's church, and I won't mention any names, but years ago, found himself in this same situation. He said, no more. But I happened to run into him a few years later, and he had forgotten all of God's way. He couldn't even tell you when the holy days were. He just threw in the towel and said, no mas. We've all seen people over the years that have said no more or no mas. Matthew 10, verse 22 states, and I quote, he who endures to the end will be saved. Luke 9, verse 62 states, no one having put his hand to the plow and looking back is fit for the kingdom. When we go through difficulties, we need to realize God's strength is there and available for us. And it's there to help us not be weary. So how often do we get weary? It seems as though as we go through life that we live in a rat race. And many times it seems the rats are winning. I was talking to an electrician friend of mine, and he said, you know, I just gave up and let the rats win. So many times we can think that. We live in a society that's moving at such a rapid pace that weariness is the rule, not the exception. And unfortunately, it applies to us also in our walk with God. Reading our Bibles, praying, giving our tithes and offerings, being faithful. We grow weary, and so many have said, no mas. The Apostle Paul warns us not to become weary. Don't be discouraged. Don't be despondent. And how can this be possible in a world that we live in? We know that there is strength available for us. We know that there's strength for every trial, that there's strength for every task that we go through. We need to determine to be obedient to God in all areas of our life. Not giving up, but enduring. Let's turn to 1 Corinthians chapter 9. Paul instructs us many times on this subject. 1 Corinthians chapter 9. We see those who have endured and endured, and then they just give up after a certain period of time. It's a long race. 1 Corinthians chapter 9, starting in verse 24. Paul's example, do you not know that those who run in a race all run, but one receives the prize? Run in such a way that you may obtain it. And we know what our prize is. Verse 25, and everyone who competes for the prize is temperate in all things. Now they do it to obtain a perishable crown, but we for an imperishable crown, certainly always looking towards God's kingdom. Therefore I run thus, not with uncertainty. Thus I fight not as one who beats the air. You might think of a boxing match and a boxer standing there just punching the air. That's what he's referring to. Thus I fight not as one who just beats the air, but I discipline my body and bring it into subjection, lest when I have preached to others, I myself should become disqualified. Failing to persevere, giving in to spiritual apathy. And we can all have those tendencies if we're not on guard. It takes determination to serve God and each other. Rather than people resigning, we need people to be people who are willing to be determined. The work we're doing is too important to leave undone. We have such a tremendous work ahead of us. God has a work to be done. I can remember recently in a seminar Mr. Kubik gave, and he spoke on the subject about how each and every one of us have a part to play. No matter who we are in church, we each are vital aspects of the work, and we can all be involved in preaching the gospel. We should have that determination to serve God and not give up, to develop that endurance, because it's a long race, and we've all seen runners that have bolted ahead in a long race, but then they fade and fall back, only to fade when the race got hard, and some even quit the race. We've all seen marathons, and in a marathon, all the runners get weary. We all have had hardships and trials in our race. Let's turn to Hebrews chapter 12. Talking about running our spiritual race. Hebrews chapter 12. We'll start in verse 1 of Hebrews 12. Hebrews 12, verse 1. Therefore, we also, since we are surrounded by so great a cloud of witnesses, let us lay aside every weight and the sin which so easily ensnares us, and let us run with endurance the race that's set before us, looking to Jesus, the author and finisher of our faith, who for the joy that was set before him endured the cross, despising the shame, and has sat down at the right hand of the throne of God. Verse 3, for consider him who endured such hostility from sinners against himself, lest you become weary and discouraged in our souls. So we should run that race. We shouldn't lose heart. 1 Peter 2:20 states, for this you were called. It's part of our calling, because Christ also suffered for us, leaving us that example that we should follow in his steps. What are some other things that we can do? Keep our mind on the kingdom of God. Keep our focus on the goal, where we are going. Not on the present, not on the present times, the world that we live in, but the future. Keeping our mind in the kingdom of God first and foremost in front of us. Philippians chapter 3. Philippians chapter 3, we'll start reading in verse 12. Keeping our mind on the goal, the kingdom of God. Verse 12, not that I have already attained or am already perfected, but I press on, that I may lay hold of that for which Christ Jesus also laid hold of me. Brethren, I do not count myself to have apprehended, but one thing I do, forgetting those things which are behind, reaching forward to those things which are ahead, looking ahead. Verse 14, I press towards the goal, for the prize of the upward call of God in Christ Jesus. Therefore, let us, as many as are mature, have this mind, and if anything you think otherwise, God will reveal even this to you. Verse 16, nevertheless, to the degree that we have already attained, let us walk by the same rule, and let us be of the same mind. So we are all in this together, focusing on looking forward to God's kingdom. Romans chapter 8. Working towards the same goal, working together in unity. Romans chapter 8 and verse 18. Putting everything into perspective. What does Paul say here in verse 18? For I consider that the sufferings of this present time are not worthy to be compared with the glory which shall be revealed in us. For the earnest expectation of the creation eagerly waits for the revealing of the sons of God. For the creation was subjected to futility, not willingly, but because of him who subjected it in hope. Because the creation itself also will be delivered from the bondage of corruption into the glorious liberty of the children of God. Verse 22, for we know that the whole creation groans and labors with birth pangs together until now. And we know all we have to do is look at the world around us, and it groans and moans. Verse 23, not only they, but we also have who have the first fruits of the Spirit, even we ourselves groan within ourselves, eagerly waiting for the adoption, the redemption of our body. Verse 24, for we were saved in this hope, but hope that is seen is not hope, for why does one still hope for what he sees? But if we hope for what we do not see, then we eagerly wait for it with perseverance. We eagerly wait for, look forward to, keep focusing on God's kingdom, keeping that front and foremost as we go about our lives, having that proper focus on God's plan. 2 Corinthians chapter 4. 2 Corinthians chapter 4, we'll start reading in verse 16. Talking about focusing on God's plan, focusing on the future. Therefore, we do not lose heart, even though our outward man is perishing, yet the inward man is renewed day by day. For our light affliction, which is for a moment, is working for us a far more exceeding and eternal weight of glory. While we do not look at the things which are seen, but at the things which are not seen, for the things which are seen are temporary, but the things which are not seen are eternal. So that's where our focus is, focusing on God's plan, eternity, God's kingdom. We should grab a hold of the fundamentals. So many times when we see someone falling away saying, no mas, no more, they've lost sight of the true fundamentals. Go back and review our fundamentals. Let's turn to 1 Peter chapter 5. 1 Peter chapter 5. When we go through difficulties, we should put our burdens on Christ. When we're carrying that load, we should put our burdens on Christ. 1 Peter chapter 5, starting in verse 6. When we are weary and heavy laden, 1 Peter chapter 5, verse 6, therefore humble yourselves under the mighty hand of God, that he may exalt you in due time, casting all your care upon him, for he cares for you. Be sober, be vigilant, because your adversary, the devil, walks about like a roaring lion, seeking who he may devour. And we need to have that patience and wait, have that endurance, that determination. Ecclesiastes 7, verse 8 states, and I quote, the patient in spirit is better than the proud in spirit. Isaiah chapter 40, a verse in the Old Testament. When we think of patience and having that patient endurance, Isaiah chapter 40. We'll start reading in verse 28, Isaiah 40. Excuse me. Have you not known? Have you not heard? Verse 40. I'm sorry, Isaiah 40, verse 28. The everlasting God, the Lord, the creator of the ends of the earth, neither faints nor is weary. There is no searching of his understanding. He gives power to the weak. He gives us strength. And to those who have no might, he increases strength. Verse 30, even the youth shall faint and be weary, and the young men shall utterly fall. But those who wait on the Lord shall renew their strength. They shall mount up with wings like eagles. They shall run and not be weary. They shall walk and not faint. We need to have that patience. We need to gather that strength from our Savior. Another reason that we may grow weary in well-doing, and something that we can do, is we need to make sure that we're doing good or serving with the right motivation. We might ask ourselves that question. Are we serving why we are serving? Is it because of the right motivation? And only we can answer that ourselves. We know what's in our heart. Let's turn to Luke chapter 18. Why are we serving? Why do we do the things that we do? Is it for the right reasons? Luke chapter 18. And we'll start reading in verse 9. This is the parable of the Pharisee and the tax collector. Verse 9, and he spoke to this parable to some who trusted in themselves, that they were righteous and they despised others. Two men went up to the temple to pray, one a Pharisee and the other a tax collector. The Pharisee stood and prayed thus with himself. And I always find that interesting. He was praying with himself. God, I thank you that I'm not like other men, extortioners, unjust, adulterers, or even as this tax collector. And he goes on to talk about how great he was. I fast twice a week. I give tithes of all that I possess. But this tax collector, standing afar off, would not so much as raise his eyes to heaven, but beat his breast, saying, God, be merciful to me. Matthew chapter 23, a few pages back, a few chapters back, Matthew chapter 23. Are we serving for the right reasons? Matthew 23 and verse 5. Talking about the Pharisees once again. But you do not be called, verse 5. The wrong verse there. But all their works they do to be seen by men. Verse 5. Why do we serve? Is it to be seen by men? They make their fat phylacteries broad and enlarge the borders of their garments. Drop down to verse 12. Whoever exalts himself will be abased, and he who humbles himself will be exalted. Verse 25. Woe to you, scribes and Pharisees, hypocrites! You clean the outside of the cup and the dish, but inside they are full of extortion and self-indulgence. Blind Pharisee, first clean the outside of the cup and dish, that the outside of them may be clean also, or clean the inside, that the outside might be clean also. What was their motivation? To be seen of men, as we read in verse 5. Verse 27. Woe to you, scribes and Pharisees, hypocrite, for you're like whitewashed tombs, which indeed appear beautiful outwardly, but inside are full of dead men's bones and all uncleanness. Even so, you also outwardly appear righteous to men, but inside you're full of hypocrisy and lawlessness. And that's what they were concerned about, how they appeared outwardly to others. The world around us is always doing things for the wrong motivation. So we should search our heart for the reasons why we're serving. Do we serve that someone will be talking about us, praising us? Do we serve to gain recognition or position? Are we weary in serving? Are we serving for the right reasons? We should examine ourselves. Some serve for selfish reasons. We saw that with the Pharisees. Some serve to receive some sort of physical crown. And if they do, they have their reward, that simple physical crown. We can ask God for strength as we go through difficulties. Ephesians 6 and verse 10 states, "Be strong in the Lord in the power of his might." And where does our true strength come from? Philippians chapter 4. Philippians chapter 4. Philippians 4 and verse 10. Paul's example. "But I rejoiced in the Lord greatly that now at last your care for me has flourished again, though you surely did care. But you lacked opportunity, not that I speak in regard to need, for I have learned in whatever state I'm in to be content. And I know how to be abased, and I know how to be abound. Everywhere and in all things, I have learned both to be full and be hungry, to abound and to suffer need." And what was his conclusion? "I can do all things through Christ who strengthens me." Jesus who strengthens him, Jesus who strengthens us. As we go through difficulties, as we endure, as we have that perseverance, that patience, we know where our strength comes from. Nehemiah 8 verse 10 states, "The joy of the Lord is your strength." Another thing that we can do to keep from growing weary is to recharge our batteries from time to time, so to speak. And many times we can do that. God gives us a plan through the feast days, the Passover, the Sabbath, to take time out from our routines, to refocus our lives, to refocus our time. Let's turn to Matthew chapter 14 as we look at even an example from Jesus Christ. He took time out to get away from the crowds. Matthew chapter 14. If we didn't stop and if God didn't tell us to take time off for the Sabbath day, many of us would never take a day off. We would never recharge our batteries. We would constantly be growing weary, and that's not good. Matthew chapter 14 and verse 13. Jesus heard it. He departed from there by boat to a deserted place by himself. And when the multitudes heard it, they followed him on foot from the cities. And Jesus went out and saw a great multitude and was moved with compassion for them and healed the sick. And when it was evening, his disciples came to him saying, "This is a deserted place and the hour is already late. Send the multitudes away that they may go in the villages and buy themselves food." And let's drop down to verse 22. Immediately Jesus made his disciples get into the boat and go before him to the other side, where he sent the multitudes away. He had to have time by himself, time to pray. We see Jesus going up to the mountain to pray, getting away from people, refocusing, recharging. Another aspect that I would like to bring out as we wrap up here is the context of the verse in Galatians 6, verse 9. And we read Galatians 6, verse 9. Let's go ahead and go back to Galatians chapter 6. And there's one more aspect I would like to refer to. Galatians 6, 9 tells us, "Let us not grow weary while doing good." But let's go back to verse 1. Another aspect is that I would like to zero in on is our giving and our generosity. And this touches on that a little bit, the context of the verse. "Brethren, if a man is overtaken in any trespass, you who are spiritual, restore such a one in a spirit of gentleness, considering yourself, lest you also be tempted. Bear one another's burdens, and so fulfill the law of Christ. For if anyone thinks himself to be something, when he is nothing, he deceives himself. But let each one examine his own work, and then he will have rejoicing in himself alone and not in another. For each one shall bear his own load." Verse 6. "Let him who is taught the word share in all good things with him who teaches." What is that talking about? That's talking about sharing our wealth to those who teach. That can be referring to our tithes and our offerings. Verse 7, "Be not deceived, God is not mocked, for whatever a man sows, that he will also reap. For he who sows to his flesh will reap the flesh of corruption, but he who sows to the Spirit will of the Spirit reap everlasting life." So we see in verse 6, "Let him who is taught the word share in all good things." And we can do that by our giving. Do we become weary in our giving? And we might think, well, look how much money we have given over the years in tithes and offerings. And that's part of what this is talking about. How generous are we with our offerings and our tithes? We see our service and our work is expected. Verse 2 here, bearing one another's burdens. Verse 3, we see that God's not impressed with fine cars, nice homes, or designer clothes. He's not impressed with our buildings or our budget. He's interested in what's in our heart, meeting the needs of others, sharing our burdens. That's what God is interested in. So are we tired? Don't quit. Are we feeling weary? Keep focused. I'd like to just quote Psalm 126 and verse 5. And talking about this, "They that sow in tears shall reap in joy. He that goes forth and weeps, bearing precious seed, shall doubtless come again with rejoicing, bringing his sheaves with him." So we are blessed when we give our tithes and offerings. When we feel tired and weary, consider Jesus. Consider his sacrifice. Consider everything that he's done for us. James 4 verse 8 states, "Draw near to God, and he will draw near to you." So we shouldn't grow weary of being patient and kind and faithful and gentleness and being self-controlled. We should not grow weary of manifesting our peace and joy in all kinds of acts of love, serving our neighbors, serving our associates, serving our family. We shouldn't lose heart in serving through love, because if we do, then the works of the flesh will take over. Why? Why do we not want to grow weary in well-doing? Because it's good for us. It's for our benefit. So as we recap what we can do to keep that from happening, what can we do to combat growing weary? Try something different. Develop godly endurance and determination. Focus on God's plan. Review the fundamentals. Serve with the proper motivation. Seek and ask God for strength. And when we look at these things, look ahead to God's kingdom, we realize certainly it's a tremendous positive message. It's a tremendous positive focus that we can have as we seek God and His kingdom. So as we wrap up today, I'll finish up by just quoting where we started off, and that was Galatians 6 and verse 9. Let us not be weary in well-doing, for in due season we shall reap if we faint not.